In these days where the latest viral jibe regarding the government might end up on Saturday Night Live, it's worth remembering a time when satire and humor, with an anarchist level of aggression, was not the norm. Not so long ago, in polite conversation, there would typically be just one snarky, clever person who could go on about everything and was a riot to listen to. Chuck Klosterman is that person. His smartest person in the room attitude with a laugh track to go with it has produced 10 books, novels, nonfiction, road narratives, and memoirs. But his latest book, Chuck Klosterman 10, A Highly Specific, Defiantly Incomplete History of the Early 21st Century, is a collection of essays that makes sense of the senselessness in our time and also delivers his informed point of view on sports and music. Kobe Bryant and Jimmy Page are profiled on these pages, among others. If overindulgence in popular culture has a therapist, his name is Chuck Klosterman.
I write about popular culture, you know, and the thing about popular culture is it's not something society needs. It's what society wants. Like, we don't need Beyonce. We want Beyonce. And it's the same with the things I cover in the book itself. I'm not somehow suggesting that this is an essential item. If somebody thinks to themselves, that seems like a crazy thing to be reading, I'm not going to try to persuade them otherwise. But if you enjoy reading about things that are weird and kind of tied into the mediated world and sort of presented the way I present things, then I appreciate your support.
You posit this question, which I've thought about but never really, you know, sat down and tried to analyze, and that is, what is the difference between seeing a live event and seeing a recorded sporting event? Because a lot of people, you know, just DVR their sporting events and they consider them equivalent, but they're not equivalent.
Well, you know, many people do try that, and I think that they have the same sort of response that I do, which it does not feel the same, and it doesn't make any sense because we do that with regular programming all the time. But when we're thinking about live events, whether it's sports, you know, election results coming in, I suppose if you love a show like The Voice or any of those programs, there's something different, which is this sense that in life now, there are so few unscripted moments that if something truly transcendent happens in a live event and you're not experiencing it live, you will somehow find out. So if
You will find out because it gets blitzed at you through YouTube.
Well, exactly. And that takes away, I think, some of the excitement of liveness. I mean, this sense that what you're seeing is not what you expect, but somehow beyond that. And when you remove that, starts feeling like a manufactured thing, which it is.
You have this great essay about the band Pavement, which reminds me of the movie High Fidelity and the Jack Black character, who is so absolutely convinced of where each band and every single fits into the philosophical firmament called music. In the time of that book and movie, High Fidelity, Jack Black was kind of a silly, geeky character, but I think actually music does form more of a commentary today, almost.
That's interesting.
Than it did a long time ago.
Why do you think that?
Because it represents particular groups. It's much more likely to comment on what's going on socially.
See, I would argue that that really peaked in the 80s and 90s, and that when the music industry sort of collapsed because of file sharing, you know, the principal thing it did for the consumer is almost move us back to the way things were in the 50s and early 60s, all singles, okay? And because it's now a singles culture, it's very possible that a young person or a young adult purchasing music sort of a la carte will have a collection of music that doesn't really have any kind of thematic relationship. Whereas in the 80s and 90s, where music was really jammed into genres, and if you were the kind of person who, say, bought a Cure record, you're almost saying to yourself, well, I'm entering this subculture or trying to. Now I feel like the thing you're talking about, you know, I mean, High Fidelity as a book came out in the late 90s. I feel like the movie was, you know, 99 or 2000. It was already starting to change then. I mean, this is kind of my opinion, but I really feel that there is less of a culture with music than there was, sort of a loss of a constructed culture that for the people existing within it was completely real.
Yeah. Well, what we've lost is a mass shared culture, with the exception of Beyonce. But what we've gained is look at the NBA. I mean, those guys walk onto the gym floor with headphones on. The NFL draft has got a playlist that goes with each draftee walking up onto the stage. Everyone has created a soundtrack to their own music. I mean, the fusion of sports and music, the fusion of, I think sort of lifestyle and music. People are very serious about their music. It's almost like everyone's become a kind of a low-grade Jack Black.
Well, everyone, I feel, has moved toward the sense that they have more autonomy over what their listening experience is, and they're building it for themselves. And because of that, I think that having sort of unlimited access to all culture shifts our view of what is necessary or important. It all sort of equates to the same shallow ocean of content. You know, I hate when I talk like this because I'm only 45. It makes me sound very old, but I do recall a time when a signifier of intelligence was straight up memory. You know, could you remember? You read a book about the Civil War. What was your how well do you remember that in conversation? Do you remember the things that you did not experience when I was getting into music in the 80s? To be a knowledgeable person, it means you had to know about the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all of these things to be kind of literate.
Like the Vietnam War, you had to know about that.
Yes, what has changed to me? It seems as though people who grew up native to the internet have somewhat of a adversarial relationship with history, in the sense that they know it's so easy to access and learn about. The idea of being the kind of person who thinks or sort of dwells on the past seems ludicrous. They're only interested sort of in the present moment and what the present moment could be in the future. They're like, I don't need to know about Vietnam. I can find it on my phone.
So the notion of someone who has a sophisticated knowledge of history as a landscape in their brain, a linear kind of construct of this happened, and this is where it happened, has become a series of Google search dots.
Sure. I mean, I wrote about this in one of my previous books. You know, I worked at newspapers throughout the 90s, and at every newspaper there was always this person who maybe they weren't so central to the day-to-day operation of the publication, but they were the person you could go up to and be like, hey, you know, I'm trying to write about this. There's this movie. It's from the 70s. It's about cars, and there's some musicians in it, and I feel like there's a scene where, like, the film burns up, and the guy would go, oh, that's Tulane Blacktop. And you'd be like, yes, that's what I was thinking of. Well, the necessity of that person is gone. The idea of the person who sort of collects the minutiae of the popular culture and stores it in their mind in a imperfect way, but can sort of be jarred to remember something. There's no need for that now. But as always, you know, the world changes and it doesn't really get better or worse. It just gets different. But if you're used to something, it's going to seem worse because it's going to seem discomforting. And I try to stay conscious of that as I sort of see the evolution of these things and I'm bothered by them, I always realize that what I'm not really bothered by is the content, but I'm bothered by the fact that it's new content to me.
Chuck Klosterman, it's great talking to you.
I appreciate you having me on.
Chuck Klosterman is the author of 10 books. His latest out this week, it's called Chuck Klosterman 10, A Highly Specific, Defiantly Incomplete History of the Early 21st Century.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.